Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm at Cell C's head office in Johannesburg today to talk to the mobile operator's chief strategy officer, Robert Paisley, and its chief legal officer, Graham McKinnon. We're going to be talking about the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which, if enacted, is going to bring sweeping changes to South Africa's telecommunications industry. Robert, Graham, thanks so much for speaking to Tech Central and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I sat through some of the presentations this week at a workshop arranged by the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services in Pretoria, at which all of the major operators and many other industry players made contributions. I think it's clear from that workshop that even the operators are at loggerheads about the best way forward, about who should get 4G spectrum and why, and what the impact of the bill will be on the industry. I think it's fair to say that Cell C, amongst the big four operators, probably has the most nuanced position on things like government's proposed wholesale open access network. You sent a detailed submission to government on the bill, which I apologize, I haven't yet had a chance to read. It's been a pretty busy week, but I'll be spending a portion of my weekend going through it. You also made oral submissions at the workshop, which I listened to, or most of your presentations. Robert, perhaps I could ask you to start and perhaps to paint us a detailed picture of Cell C's position on the white paper and specifically on spectrum allocation and the wholesale open access network, or WOAN. And Graham, please feel free to jump in at any time.
Sure. Well, thank you for that, Duncan. I think it might be worthwhile to sort of stick with really the issues that we addressed during our oral representations,
sure.
Because here we were focused very much on what we see as being the key issue, which is the market structure, the problem that this creates for the market and for the industry and for South Africa as a whole, and then the WOAN as a potential solution to the market structure issue that we see as being the root of the problem. And I think the starting point is to look first of all at the current market structure and what this has led to, and then what is the envisaged market structure as the department sees it, or at least as we interpret how the department sees this in future. So if we start with the current market structure, which is, and here I'm obviously just talking about the mobile telecommunications industry. It's undeniable that this is a highly concentrated market. If you look at the HHI index in terms of service revenue market share, where Vodacom is consistently above 50%, MTN is of the order of 34-35%, Cell C around about 12%, and Telkom around about 4%. If you look at those market shares, we get to an HHI index of around about 3,900. And in terms of certainly US regulation in most industries, 2,500 is seen as being a marker for a highly concentrated industry. So I think it's undeniable that this is a concentrated industry, and it's dominated by Vodacom first and MTN second, and has been for a number of years with little change over that period. And there are obvious reasons for this, and some of them good, some of them bad. But the biggest reasons for this are access to infrastructure and access to spectrum, because these are two huge impediments to any new competitors coming into the market. Now, it's our view that this market structure has resulted in a number of significant problems. And obviously the most obvious ones to consumers are high cost to communicate, and that's not just a high price per minute or a high price per megabyte, but it's also a whole host of other things that go with that that make up the cost of communication, which includes bundle expiries or out-of-bundle rates or having to buy a bundle and then you have breakage so you can't actually use all of your data. It's all of these, this whole suite of factors that contributes to the cost to communicate. So high cost to communicate on the one hand and inadequate access to the service on the other hand. And this is largely geographic based. So clearly for most technologies, starting with 2G, moving into 3G, moving into 4G, we see these being deployed extensively and competitively in the main metro areas, and then almost as an afterthought they get deployed to the rest of the country, and in some parts of the country they never actually get there at all. And then the third problem is transformation of ownership, or which is a broad problem, I mean not just in the telecommunications industry, but it is certainly not helped by the market structure as it's currently as it currently exists. Now it's these problems that we see as being the fundamental issues that the bill is trying to address, and this in our view is why the WOAN has been put forward as being a possible solution, and we've interrogated this and we do agree that in many respects the WOAN is actually potentially a good solution for some of these problems. Now it's not a panacea and it's not the only way that this could be handled, but given that that's what the bill is postulating, we are trying to make the best of this position. Now what are the causes of these problems? Well, inadequate competition is kind of the starting point, and that goes back to the market structure, and one of the fundamental results of this is duplication of infrastructure, and this is in our view again one of the big causes of relatively high costs, both in the metro areas where there's true competition and also in the rural areas. And without some form of aggregation of demand in the rural areas, it's almost impossible to see how with the current model we are going to find ubiquitous service throughout South Africa. So moving to kind of the envisaged market structure, in the envisaged market structure the bill envisages the WOAN competing in the infrastructure layer only. So there's a clear separation between the infrastructure layer, and it doesn't necessarily, when I'm talking about infrastructure, it doesn't necessarily mean buying, building, and owning your own infrastructure. It means accessing infrastructure, and that may mean buying your own infrastructure in certain circumstances, but it may also mean accessing other people's infrastructure on a competitive basis and on a cost-oriented basis rather than a purely competitive basis where it is possible for operators to make supernormal profits from infrastructure which happens to be strategically situated. For example, if you have a base station in a urban area where there may be planning regulations or there may be other restrictions on putting in other site infrastructure, it's almost impossible for another operator such as Cell C to access the infrastructure of an existing operator which is already there, normally Vodacom or MTN, because either you have to pay a premium to access that site, which is in no way related to cost, and the only reason you have to pay that is because it's impossible to actually duplicate that infrastructure, or alternatively you have to come with a site which you can swap. So Vodacom and MTN are well positioned to exchange infrastructure between themselves. Third parties coming in and trying to access that infrastructure are at a significant disadvantage, and we've experienced this firsthand, as have many other players trying to come into the market.
Can I just interrupt at that point with a question? Do the facilities leasing regulations introduced by ICASA not deal with that issue?
In principle, yes, but in practice,
no.
Actually, no. and that's at a number of different levels, because there are, I mean, the first thing to say is that the facilities leasing agreements that have been lodged with ICASA, in my view, in any event, bear no real resemblance to cost. So they are premium priced when they are lodged with ICASA.
Yes.
That's the first issue. The second issue is that if you actually try and access infrastructure through these already premium-priced agreements, there are regularly impediments, practical impediments to actually accessing that infrastructure.
If I can just jump in there, I think what those regulations say is that if there are reasons why you don't have to share, you can actually advance those reasons. So if there's technical or economic reasons why you don't think you should share, you're not obliged to. And when practically, as Robert says, it comes to us trying to access, we always, you know, presented with some kind of reason, which is within the regulations as to why it's not feasible.
So if I can then move on to kind of the envisaged market structure. So the envisaged market structure is to have a very much a competitive market. I mean, this is not, at least as we read the Act as it's drafted, this is not intended to create a monopoly. It's intended to create another infrastructure player, which in many cases will be using existing infrastructure, but also will fill infrastructure gaps where that's required.
Is the effect, though, and the government is talking about the possibility of assigning all unassigned high-demand spectrum, which is used for mobile broadband, to the wholesale open access network. If that happens, is that not in effect creating a monopoly because it's the only company with access to that spectrum?
First of all, we don't read the Act as it's drafted at the moment to necessarily imply that. And as I think you know, we have proposed we basically support this so-called hybrid model, whereby a certain amount of spectrum is made available to the incumbent operators.
Right.
But the majority of the spectrum, yes, you're right. In our view, it would be appropriate for that to be issued to the WOAN to ensure that it is able to fulfill its mandate in terms of providing service. But exactly how much that should be, well, I think, you know, a lot of water needs to flow under the bridge in terms of doing proper analysis to determine what those thresholds should be. I mean, my feeling at the moment would be that the WOAN would have a disproportionate share of the sub-1 gig spectrum, given that the existing incumbents already have quite a significant allocation of that spectrum, and potentially a slightly smaller fraction of the higher spectrum. And when I say smaller, I still mean at least 50%, but, you know, so a decent whack of it.
But the incumbent operators are sitting on huge customer bases, and they obviously need a lot of spectrum to be able to service those customers. A WOAN would be coming to market maybe with some customers from the smaller operators, but it would still be a smaller operator relative to the big two. What justification would there be in giving the WOAN a significant chunk of spectrum rather than, say, the amount of spectrum that it might need to service its initial customer base and perhaps growing it from there down the line?
Well, I think you need to look at what the envisaged market structure is. There are a number of aspects to this. The first, as I say, is that they are only operating in the infrastructure space. They're not operating in the service layer.
Yeah.
So the one of the functions of the WOAN will be to enable other new entrants to come in and offer services on their infrastructure. And these are, you know, there are any number of new entrants that you can envisage coming in. And I'm not necessarily talking about deep rural only offerings. I'm talking about proper service providers offering decent service to customers and potentially in competition with all of the other existing operators, including ourselves. Then you have the incumbent operators, and you say that the WOAN will come to market with customers from smaller operators such as ourselves. I'm not sure I see it that way. I mean,
right.
I think it's too early to speculate exactly what form the WOAN will take, because, you know, I'm not in a position to say this is exactly what it's going to look like. But what I can say is that in order to be successful, the WOAN will need some form of an offtake undertaking from the incumbent operators, at least from operators that take spectrum in terms of the spectrum auction process. And I think that's a fundamental success factor for the WOAN. And I think, as I understand it, the incumbent operators have pretty much
agreed to that
as being a principle. So the WOAN will be providing service at some level to the incumbent operators. It will probably also be providing service, again, on basically a commercial basis to the likes of ourselves and other major operators such as Telkom, but then, as I say, to a plethora of smaller operators or new entrants. So I think that the justification in terms of spectrum is, it's not a matter of taking it all away from the other operators. We are advocating spectrum to be licensed as I say, the incumbent operators, and that probably does mean Vodacom and MTN. But the justification is that it enables a change in the market structure and the introduction of really significant additional competition, both at the infrastructure layer and also at the service layer. Mm-hmm. And there are, I mean, there are other benefits as well. Now, obviously, I mean, I mentioned the, what we see as being the problems at the beginning. The third of these problems was transformation of ownership, and clearly, at the service layer, there are many opportunities for these new entrants in the service layer to introduce new ownership into the industry, which has not been a feature of this industry historically. And the same goes even for the WOAN. I mean, there are, again, I'm not in a position to say exactly what the ownership model of the WOAN is going to be, except that clearly it's not going to be a government-owned monopoly. It's going to be private sector-owned. And I think that the department, I mean, even in the hearings, the Deputy Director General was at pains to stress that this is not intended to be a government owned entity, and at every turn he was trying to say, well, look, you know, the private sector needs to take ownership of this and drive it and come with models that stimulate competition, that stimulate investment, and that actually get it to work, rather than trying to push against it and you know, cause it to fail, and in doing so actually jeopardize the use of the spectrum, which potentially could otherwise be extremely valuable.
Graham, let me ask you to jump in here. We don't know much about what this WOAN is going to look like at this stage, but in Cell C's view, what is the ideal structure? How should it operate? I presume it should have its own board, but maybe talk us through how it would work practically from an operational perspective, and then perhaps how a company like Cell C might engage with it.
Okay, so I mean, I think we still under, you know, doing our own sort of modelling exercise at the moment to see if there's any sort of optimal structure that we would like to see. But I think high level, I'll just give you a few pointers. Obviously, it's a private company. I mean, I think Robert has emphasised that, and it's a key issue, because I think we'll talk a little bit about the funding structures, but the, you know, it would be a private consortium. So one of the questions was asked is, would an existing licensee, for example, become the WOAN? Now, we don't see that as being practical. So we believe that it would be a private entity that would need to obviously receive the WOAN license, so to speak. And then with that license, there would be obviously the incentives, the obligations. Clearly, there will be some obligations, and then the entity will be sort of given a mandate to proceed. The structure of how the – so there will be private equity owners, and there will be funding sought. I think what we have looked at quite closely is there are examples already around, you know, public-private partnerships. For example, the toll road concessions is one very useful example in my mind, where, you know, a consortium of bids for a toll road concession. On the back of being granted that concession, they are able to raise the funding necessary. And there's various sources of that funding, but it has to have obviously a solid business case. As Robert has mentioned, we believe that one of the fundamental building blocks to that business case is a guaranteed offtake from the existing operators. And that almost becomes like a bankable you know, proposition. And then I think one of the other aspects, as Robert has alluded to, so that's really just sort of high level the corporate structure of the animal. Who would participate in that? That's for industry and the private sector to sort out. So, you know, we would obviously be interested in participating in the equity of something like that, if the business case made sense. And also as a potential provider. So what Robert has said is this is not a case of a new entrant coming along and building out a whole national network. That's not what we see here. We see this as being potentially some build, but also you know, on a commercial cost-orientated basis, procuring some network infrastructure from existing players. So for example, Cell C could perhaps contribute some of its network into the WOAN, and that is how you would have to cover, you know, the obligations that the WOAN would be placed on the WOAN. We don't think that the WAON should be overly burdened with universal service obligations relative, for example, to the incumbents. I think we need to move away from the possible misconception that this is going to be some kind of rural, operator that's forced to only, roll out in rural areas. Because there have been examples. I mean, I don't know if you recall, Duncan, but sure, we're talking many years. We've all been in the industry quite a long time. They had that concept. They were called U-cells.
Yes.
And I think there were 12 or 13 of them that were licensed. And that was a hopeless failure because the business model just never worked right. So I think what we are saying is this is a national – it has to be a national operator. And as I said, it has to be given the right incentives. And we think that we can actually – or not we, but – this can be crafted in such a way that it's not a failure.
Is it? How does the WAON get its funding? Is it going to be supplied purely in the form of equity from its shareholders, or will it go to the market and raise debt?
Absolutely, a big chunk of its funding will have to be debt financed. And in a way, it re-emphasizes that this is a private it's a private structured organization, and raising debt finance will instill a large degree of discipline in terms of business planning, in terms of how it sources its infrastructure, and in terms of how it enters into its long-term agreements. So it will have to have a fundable business plan and a robust business plan as it launches in order to raise the finance that it will require. Graham said a big chunk of that will be offtake agreements, not just from the major operators, but also potentially from government in less serviced areas where government demand could well be aggregated and sold into the WAON.
Just, Duncan, I mean, if you recall in our submission at the hearings, we made reference to a couple of case studies. And I think I'd like to just emphasize that for the listeners. We're not just talking pie-in-the-sky stuff here from Cell C. We actually are a shareholder in Fiberco, which is really, I think, was the first proper open access network. And sure, it is long-haul transmission as opposed to, what we're talking about here, wireless. But I think the principles still apply. And there, a proper business case was built. There they had, similar to what we are proposing for offtake, they had what they call key anchor tenants. There were about three or four key anchor tenants.
Ourselves, ISBT.
Yeah, and they had to procure those up front. And then based on those agreements, Fiberco then went out to the market and it raised debt finance. And it's been successful. I mean,
It's been successful in a couple of ways. I mean, it's financially been successful in its own right, but most importantly, as far as the WAON is concerned, it's been successful in terms of massively reducing the cost of long haul fibre. I mean, if you see, I mean, this was part of our presentation, but if you see the pricing on a long haul link on one of the routes Fiberco has rolled out, Jobo Blum. In 2013, there were only two parties who had basically exclusive and non-open access fiber on those links, and you were paying R500,000 for a gigabit per second or close to that for an STM4. Roll forward 5 years after Fiberco launched with an open access model in 2014, and you're now literally looking at a 95% price reduction.
You attribute that to open access rather than the fact that there's competitive link on that route?
No, I attribute it to the open access model, because NLD also launched, but NLD was really a consortium of Vodacom, MTN, Neotel, in order to try and source their own fibre for their own internal consumption. So it didn't have such a dramatic impact on the pricing of access to that fibre, whilst the open access model adopted by Fiberco did very much. And so we see, yes, NLD was important, but the real driver, in our view, was the open access model adopted by Fiberco.
And there are other examples. I mean, you look at the undersea cable industry. Probably 5 years ago, the prices we were being quoted as a customer were dramatically more than they are today, and it's just because there's massive competition in this industry.
The other example we highlighted was Vumatel, as not in building a successful business for itself, which it's done. I mean, it's I think in discussions to be sold for a large number to Vodacom as we speak, pretty much. But that's not the point. The point is the impact that Vumatel has as a catalyst to bring down the FTTH pricing in South Africa, and the response of the market to the open access model which Vumatel adopted, and the fact that in adopting this open access model they brought in a large number of service providers to provide the customer service, and this resulted in a plethora of new offerings, for example month-to-month contracts and things, which were completely unheard of in the fiber space up until that point. And the market responded very quickly, and you'll see that, I mean, Telkom, as the incumbent in that space, reduced its prices enormously and invested heavily, and in our view, almost entirely because of this open access model that had been adopted by Vumatel. So we see real success in this model in many different areas of the broadband value chain already. And the question we ask is not where are the international precedents for this, but more, this has been done successfully in so many other components of the broadband value chain. Why not in wireless as well?
You listen to the big incumbent operators, and they'll tell you that the WOAN model hasn't worked in other markets. They point to Rwanda, where it hasn't really taken off, or where they've launched a network, but the prices are very high. Mexico has been looking at this for years, but it hasn't really gone any. Russia canned its plans to build a similar network. Why are we assuming that if all those other countries have tried this model and haven't succeeded, we're going to succeed here in South Africa?
I just want to say a couple of things. I was actually speaking to Jose Dos Santos this morning, our CEO, and you know, we were just chatting generally about these issues. And he said to me, you know, Graham, there's a lot of negativity in South Africa about sort of our capabilities. And without being overly optimistic and naive, you know, he said to me, for example, you know, if people had said to Christian Barnard, you can't do the heart operation, or Elon Musk, you can't, battery-operated cars are a waste of time. They wouldn't have achieved what they had achieved if they'd taken that to heart. So, I think the point there is that as South Africans, I think we need to back ourselves. I think we can do that. I think the answer to your question is that we need to look at the differences in the markets of those markets where it maybe hasn't been that successful. I think Mexico is not correct to say that it hasn't been successful, but clearly there is a very different market structure there. So our market structure, I think, is in some ways quite unique, and does open the possibility for this. Having said that, I think what we're also saying is we don't want to do something rash here. I mean, we're not going to just try a crazy experiment that isn't going to work. I think what Cell C is saying is that let's not torpedo this now. Let's look at how it can work. We believe it can work, and we need to go through this, with fine detail, a fine tooth comb, to see where the possible failure points are and to address those. And I think what we've been saying is that, you know, there are success stories in open access. I know we've spoken about Fiberco and Vumatel as case studies, but I sort of do also refer to, you know, there are power utility type examples. There are road type examples, and you know, we need to look at those as well, not just narrowly at the telecommunications necessarily, because yes, this may be quite a new concept, and who's to say that South Africans don't get it right? Just to carry on, I think we need to be clear that it's obvious that the dominant incumbents would argue against this, right? They see infrastructure competition as their advantage. Clearly, if you have the biggest network, you want to keep competing on infrastructure, because as we know, this industry is clearly a scale game. The bigger you are, the bigger you stay, the more money you have to invest, etc., etc. But what we're saying is that's the past. Infrastructure competition is basically a waste of money. You can do things in a lot, you know, much more efficient way, and we need to look to the future. I think government have a difficult task here. They can't be looking at the narrow financial interests of one or two, you know, very profitable companies. They have to say, what do they want the industry to look like in 10, 20, 30 years? And it's a tricky task, and we're sympathetic, and we think that there's very few tools that government have to actually change the market. And spectrum is pretty much not the only one, but it's one of the very few. So I think that's what they're trying to achieve here, and I think we're just saying, you know, let's not just throw it out now.
Let me play devil's advocate for a moment here. Listening to the Vodacom and MTN presentations at the workshop this week, they made the point that they've delivered over 99% 2G and 3G coverage to the country. Telkom's representative, Alfonso Samuels from OpenServe, said that there's market failure. Is 99% population coverage really market failure? And does it matter that we have two dominant operators? Because achieving that sort of availability of service seems to me, anyway, to be a success.
I think there are a couple of answers to that. I mean, the first is that I can point to significantly more than 1% of the South African population who are not covered by 3G service at the moment. So I think it depends very much on your definition of of population coverage as to, you know, what the number actually looks like. But that point aside, access to a service does not just mean the ability
to connect,
to access that service if you have the financial resources to do it. It also, there is a component not just of geographic coverage, but of financial ability to access the service. And I think that brings into play the cost to communicate. And it's really on the cost side that the WOAN is, I mean, it has a role to play on the geographic side as well, but it has a significant role to play on the cost side in terms of bringing down the cost of infrastructure.
Robert, you have a slightly different approach to Telkom. Telkom argues that all the available spectrum should go to the WOAN. You're saying some of it needs to be reserved for the incumbent operators. Why are you two taking a different approach on that? How do you differ in your understanding of this, that you argue that the incumbents should still get access to additional spectrum?
I think there are a couple of points there, and perhaps it goes back to our fundamental view of the Act and what it's trying to achieve, because we are trying to make a success of this, and we're trying to use the tools that are available to ensure that the policy objectives set by government are delivered. Now, this means, in our view, that and we were quite clear in our presentation on this, that not everything in the bill as it's currently formulated is likely to lead to a successful outcome. So we also, in our submissions, have made suggestions as to how we see the ECA amendment bill being further amended to ensure that the WOAN is actually successful. And I think there are some kind of almost fundamental pitfalls that are currently in the draft, which we would prefer to see reframed. And probably the biggest of those is the way that it is being interpreted, at least by Vodacom and MTN, to potentially take back spectrum from Vodacom and MTN in particular, and actually I presume their interpretation is from all players, to give to the WOAN either before or at least at the expiry of their current licenses. That's not our understanding of the department's position, and we believe that if that's how the drafting is interpreted at the moment, it will need to be amended. So we are by no means beating the drum of take spectrum back from existing operators and distribute it to the WOAN, and we're pretty confident that actually the department means that, although it has the right not to reissue spectrum, that presuming new license conditions are accepted once spectrum is available, that it will be reissued to the existing spectrum owners. And similarly, for the unissued or unreleased high-demand spectrum, it's our view that we should really be taking a pragmatic approach to ensuring that there is a successful structure. And given that we don't see the WOAN as being a monopoly, we believe it's important that Vodacom and MTN remain competitive in the infrastructure space. It seems to us that it's likely that there will be a commercial model that would work that enables them to participate in either spectrum auctions or some other similar mechanism to obtain that spectrum.
So the mechanism for allocating spectrum for the WOAN, should the spectrum be made available free of charge to the WOAN and the rest of the spectrum to interested parties on an auction basis? What is your feeling around this?
I think it's difficult to give you a categorical answer until we're clearer on what the obligations would be on the WOAN in terms of rollout and in terms of infrastructure investment. But equally, what the likely business model would look like. I think in principle, we would be supportive of either no spectrum cost for the WOAN or deferred spectrum costs linked in some way to some other metric. But as I say, it's a little bit early to put something concrete on the table. But yes, we would certainly see a differential between spectrum issued to the WOAN and spectrum issued to the commercial operators.
Do you see the WOAN being a for-profit entity?
We see it as being an entity that would be entitled to make a fair return on its equity investment. So it would clearly need to be able to make a return sufficient to settle its debt holders and also to provide a fair return. But given that, it will have on the one hand access to infrastructure on a sort of cost-plus type basis through facilities leasing type agreements, and on the other hand, an offtake agreement from a number of different parties, it seems to me that it's likely to be a relatively low-risk investment. So I don't think it's going to be the sort of investment that's going to return the kind of equity returns that South Africa is used to. Mm-hmm. But having said that, it's going to have to return something. So I think there'll be some middle ground in terms of a fair return on equity.
Should that fair return be defined in the WOAN's license agreement, license that's issued to it?
I don't believe it should be defined in the bill. I mean, in the Act. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there will have to be some form of clear rules, as it were.
I think, Duncan, I keep sort of hopping on it, but I think like the toll road concessions are mm-hmm. the sort of model that I like without necessarily understanding them fully. And that's because, those I assume are relatively low risk, but there is a return. But I think without actually necessarily regulating that the return would be kept, I think in and of the sort of model, they are kind of kept by the market.
So do you think the open access model will curb any monopolistic excesses of a WOAN that has access to a majority of future spectrum? I mean, the worry is that the WOAN is going to become another infrastructure monopoly in South Africa.
Yeah, I think the incentives and obligations need to be very carefully looked at. I don't think we're naive to say that it's a simple task, but I think you can get it right. And I think there can be some kind of overriding rule which allows the license to regulate that in some way. Because obviously the intention is for not to become a monopoly. I mean, we come from pre-1994, when the mobile operators and that were licensed, where clearly that monopoly wasn't great for the country. And I think everybody accepts that. So I think our view is that what we're trying to do is stimulate competition, not stifle it.
But there's a risk that it could have unintended consequences if not done, managed very carefully.
Yeah, I think we're saying it definitely has to be managed carefully. As I say, I think the incentives and obligations are the mechanism to do that.
But if you look at the market structure as envisaged, we do clearly see a number of major competitors remaining in the infrastructure space. It's not as though everything is being handed to the WOAN. And to talk of this high demand spectrum being in some sense kind of the sum total of spectrum that's available is just misleading. I mean, the incumbent operators have very significant spectrum assets and in many cases actually better spectrum assets than are available or will be available to the WOAN. So yeah. I think there's a lot of balance here.
Okay. And you believe that these operators, these big incumbent operators, should get more spectrum? The question is, how much should they get? Does Cell C want any additional exclusive use spectrum, or are you happy to throw your lot in with the WOAN?
We would love to have our own exclusive spectrum, yes, absolutely, and we do have a need for it. Having said that, I think realistically, if we're looking at a like-for-like auction-type process, the boys with the bigger checkbooks are going to walk away with the spectrum that we would otherwise have set our sights on. So yes, in an ideal world, we would certainly be in the process for spectrum.
Okay. So do you see yourself bidding for exclusive use spectrum at any point in the future in a WOAN environment?
I think it's going to depend very much on what the rules look like, what the pricing looks like, and also the degree to which we have signed up for offtakes or other agreements with the WOAN. So I think it's a bit early for us to say. I mean, certainly in the original various processes which have been mooted for access to spectrum, we've always expressed an interest, provided that it's handled in an appropriate manner.
Graham, is the WOAN even possible under South African competition law? I know MTN and Telkom tried to do a radio access network sharing deal a couple of years ago, and it was shot down by the competition authorities. Is what's proposed here not something quite similar? You're proposing sharing infrastructure to deploy a national network. Is the competition commission not going to have something to say about this?
I'm sure they will have something to say, and I think that this will have to be crafted in such a way that it doesn't fall foul of our competition laws, but we, on our sort of early analysis, don't think it will. I think a lot of the issues that arise in competition law clearly are around dominance and also taking acquisition of control. And I don't think that that's what would be triggered here. So, for example, the Competition Act, you know, if you take control or acquire control of somebody else's business or part of that business, significant part of that business, that's what triggers the Competition Act prohibitions. And I don't think that's what we are suggesting here at all. I mean, I think what we are talking about is where there's sort of geographic network that's available that can be contributed, there's a sort of slicing and dicing of the best available network. I think what we also see is there are tower companies in South Africa, for example, that are also players in the industry. They would also be part of this mix. So it wouldn't be acquiring control of any one or two operators. I don't think that's what we foresee.
How long do you think it'll take to get a commercial WOAN off the ground? Years? Graham?
It's certainly not something that's going to happen in the next few months, but I also don't think that it's something that initially will take 3 years. So somewhere in between that. And I think that what we're saying is that if you prescribe the rules very carefully, and we actually want the minister and DTBS to actually get very involved in this, because I think it's imperative that they clearly set these parameters so that people know, you know, where they can play. If you leave it to the private sector, we believe that it can be done, you know, in a reasonable space of time, you know, bearing in mind that, you know, some of the spectrum is actually still tied up, etc. You know, I think that the timing could actually work pretty well.
In terms of the TV broadcast migration.
Correct, correct. So I think that, you know, we don't see it as a three-year process and we don't see it as a three-month process. But somewhere in there, okay. I think, is more realistic, yeah.
The Mexicans spoke about the WOAN in that country getting 700 megahertz spectrum. Which spectrum do you guys see the WOAN having access to in South Africa? Obviously, we're talking 700, 800, 2.6 and 3.5 as the key bands. Should the WOAN have access to all of those bands, or is there an argument that maybe it should only play in the digital dividend space?
I think it's essential that the WOAN would have access to both sub 1 gig and higher frequency spectrum for high capacity service delivery as well. So I think the answer is both below 1 gig and also a big chunk of the 2.6 and potentially some of the 3.5 as well. Having said that, I think the studies need to be done to determine exactly what would be appropriate. And but in principle, yes, all of the above.
The Minister of Telecommunications, Siyabonga Gcwele, asked the CSIR to do such a report last year. I've been trying to get a copy of it unsuccessfully for some time now. Have you seen it?
No, we've also been trying to get a copy, but we haven't been successful in doing that.
Yeah. It seems to have disappeared. Someone's put it in a drawer somewhere and is not sharing it.
Yeah, we haven't seen it, so it's okay. Difficult to comment. Yeah, we know about it,
yeah.
But we also just haven't seen it.
Sure. So you mentioned, Robert, that MTN and Vodacom already have sub-gig spectrum. Of course, Cell C does as well. And you expressed a view a bit earlier in this discussion that perhaps the WOAN should be given preferential access to digital dividend spectrum. Should the big incumbents be denied access to any further sub-1 gig spectrum, in your view?
I wouldn't frame it that way.
No.
I don't see a reason to deny anyone access to spectrum, to be frank.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question is more what does the WOAN require in order to fulfill its mandate, and once that's been determined, then what is available? And by all means, if there is spectrum available, then make it available, and that means make it available to the incumbent operators or potentially other parties as well. But I think certainly it's Cell C's position that this shouldn't be divvied up to such a degree that it devalues the ability of operators to actually use the blocks that are allocated to them.
Has Cell C itself done any technical feasibility studies of how much spectrum the WOAN might need?
We've done some high-level studies.
Yeah.
The problem is with engineers. If you ask them how much spectrum they need, their answer is more.
All of it.
So yeah, so they, you know, it's quite difficult to get a definitive answer out of them. But I think what we, you know, are sort of, it's north of probably 55%. That's kind of our thinking at the moment. And it's as I say, it's quite difficult to pin the engineers down, but that's kind of where we are.
Okay, around 55% mark. So would Cell C be happy with the remaining 45% of the spectrum going to the two incumbent operators?
Well, I think 60-20-20 is definitely a split that would potentially be a compromise that might work if that is adequate for the WOAN.
If it's adequate for the WOAN,
it's too early, I think, for us to take a clear position on that.
Okay. Now, I know you guys are strong proponents of open access, and certainly DTPS has been shouting about open access from the rooftops, if you like. Listening to the presentations from MTN and Vodacom in particular at the workshop this week, there was a strong pushback against them being forced to open their networks to other providers, the sort of open access component of the bill. I think it was Shamil Yusuf from Vodacom who argued that if I build a house and I have to provide access to it to everyone at no cost or at a zero cost or some sort of cost plus basis, then why would I build a house in the first place? Is it fair? I mean, these guys have spent, 100 billion rand more than that over the last 10 years, over the last 15 years, building out their infrastructure. Is it fair to put out a piece of regulation or a piece of legislation saying, sorry guys, you're going to have to open your network to your competitors? Guys spent the money they invested the time and effort in building their infrastructure. Surely it's unfair to expect them to open their networks to their competition.
Yeah, I'll let Robert answer it, but I just want to make sort of one statement. And it's amazing how Vodacom and MTN seem to have very short memories, because they sort of seem to only start the story at a particular point in time. But what they're not saying or not disclosing is the massive advantages that they were given, the leg up when they started. And
you're talking about interconnection.
Interconnection, yeah. And they, this helped them to establish themselves. So you have to start at that position, not, you know, today they just kind of, you know, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and built these wonderful networks without any assistance.
And I think from my side, the premise of that remark of Shamil's is that they're being expected to do this for free or for sub cost, and that's not how we envisage this at all. I mean, cost plus means cost plus. It means you make a fair return on what you've done, but you don't make a supernormal return on what you've done. And that's the position that we as infrastructure seekers often find ourselves in. I mean, we find ourselves in a position where we are expected to pay many multiples of cost for access to infrastructure, which actually was built 10 or 15 years ago, has been fully recovered in any event, and now we're being expected to pay more than replacement cost in order to access it. I mean, it's manifestly wrong, and it needs to change, and I think the department is intent on changing it.
I suppose the real challenge is going to be determining what a fair price is. And I know, Graham, you've mentioned the term cost orientation quite a lot during this discussion. And I know there are different regulatory models for determining what a fair price is and how you measure the value of these sort of instruments.
Derek,
just talk me through how you see an open access model working and how the regulator might get involved and what sort of pricing model might be best to apply here.
So, as I said, I mean, obviously the regulator is fundamental in having to license the WoAN. And I think what we're saying is that, for example, the interconnection regime and the models that get built around looking at cost there are very useful. We, as you may know, are currently in the process of going through the sort of next cycle of MTR regulation. And we are actually in the, you know, busy, all of the operators are busy submitting a whole lot of information to ICASA, who are busy building top-down and bottom-up models. And I think those, to me, seem to be the basis of determining some kind of cost. Mm-hmm. But as Robert said, it's not necessarily just, about cost recovery. There may be some, there needs to be a reasonable return. This is not, as has been suggested, some kind of expropriation of a network. It has to be reasonable. And I think that's where the regulator needs to undertake that exercise, which I would assume would be similar to what they're doing in the MTR process, and then apply that. And as I say, I think what we are seeing as well, or what we consider, is that it's not necessarily going to be that you sort of insist on accessing somebody's entire national network. There would be some kind of geographic input and assessment as well. So, I think that the regulator needs to regulate that aspect quite carefully. I think the current infrastructure sharing rules and that aren't really working. I know that the dominant operators are saying that they are there, but as we've right at the beginning of the conversation said, that practically they don't really work. So yes, the ICASA needs to, or ICASA or whatever authority makes this decision needs to actually to regulate this properly.
Robert Paisley is Chief Strategy Officer and Graham McKinnon is Chief Legal Officer of Cell C. Thanks so much for speaking to Tech Central today. This has been a really great conversation.
Thanks, Duncan.